Good evening. It is 7 o'clock in the Midwest, and this is KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week for Monday, April 5th. I'm Dennis Hart. Welcome to another in our series of live programs in this time slot, where we explore and analyze what's going on at Iowa's state capital, legislation that's in the works, legislation that could be in the works, and what it means for all of us. As always, I'm joined by Laura Bellin of the must-read political blog site Bleeding Heartland. And Laura, as always, it is good to be with you on this Monday night.
Nice to be here, Dennis.
Well, Laura, we both know that last week was a big one in the state legislature because the second funnel deadline loomed, and we're going to talk about all of that in just a few minutes. But first, we have to talk about the big news in Iowa's second congressional district, where Democrat Rita Hart withdrew her challenge to Republican U.S. Representative Marionette Miller Meeks's election. Now, Hart had previously asked the U.S. House to review the outcome of that November election, which was decided in Meeks's favor by six. That's right, six votes out of 400,000 or so cast. So let's unpack that one right now. This was a very big deal, both in Iowa and across the nation, really.
Yes, the Republicans really made a national issue out of this disputed election in the second congressional district. And the law under which Rita Hart challenged the result was enacted in 1969, and more than 100 candidates for the U.S. House or Senate have used that law to appeal to either the House or the Senate. So it's not, in that sense, it's not an unusual thing in a close race for a candidate to go and ask the committee to review it. The House Administration Committee had not yet determined exactly what steps they were going to take. They were reviewing, they had agreed not to dismiss Rita Hart's challenge, but they hadn't decided on a schedule and what kind of evidence they would hear. And John Deeth, who's an elections worker in Johnson County, he had mentioned that last week his planned deposition kept getting delayed. So he thought something might be up there. And it seems that what happened is the Democrats just were under a lot of pressure. The Republicans were running ads in the districts of vulnerable Democrats all over the country, saying that Nancy Pelosi wants to steal this seat. And so a number of Democrats came out last week and said that they didn't think that Marionette Miller Meeks should be unseated. And so I think that there was just pressure behind the scenes on Rita Hart to not let this thing go any further.
One of the things the Republicans said was that Hart had the opportunity first to appeal to Iowa courts. She did not, and therefore going to the House was, if you will, foul play. So let's unpack that one.
Well, the federal law does not require that candidates go to court in their own states before appealing to Congress. In fact, this was considered in the 1990s. There was a California Republican who disputed an election, and the Democrat at the time tried to get his appeal dismissed, saying he didn't go to court in California. And the House Administration Committee, which was under Republican control at the time, said, no, we're going to investigate this thoroughly because it's our purview. And in fact, they did investigate it, but they didn't seat him because it turned out that he didn't get more votes. I mean, the tricky thing is that Iowa law sets a very early deadline for resolving any contest of a U.S. House or Senate race. That would have all had to be decided by December 8th. And the election results weren't even certified until November 30th. So it would give Rita Hart basically a week to formulate an appeal, file the contest, have a court form, consider the rules. There just wouldn't have been time to hear and thoroughly consider the legal issues, let alone do a recount of almost 400,000 ballots. I mean, that just isn't possible. In Minnesota in 2008, when there was that very close Senate race between Al Franken and Norm Coleman, Minnesota's law doesn't have that kind of a deadline. And Norm Coleman filed an election contest, and that went on for months. I mean, it was 3 or 4 months that his election contest was pending. And then he appealed in the Minnesota court. So that wasn't resolved until late June, and Al Franken was sworn in July 2009. So a real election contest can take a very long time. And so I think it's reasonable for Rita Hart's legal team to say, look, it wasn't possible to go through the Iowa courts and have this all resolved by December 8th. But the optics of that were bad. And Republicans jumped on that to say she didn't appeal in Iowa courts because she knew she would lose. That was their talking point. She knew she would lose, and that's why she went running to Nancy Pelosi to try to steal the seat. Well, you know, Nancy Pelosi was never in a position to steal the seat, nor was she ever going to attempt to steal the seat. I mean, there wouldn't have been any attempt to seat Rita Hart unless an investigation demonstrated that she received more votes. And since there never was a thorough investigation, we don't know what they would have found if they had looked at all the ballots.
What are you hearing around the state right now? Could we expect a rematch between Hart and Marionette Miller Meeks next year?
Well, I think that this has really damaged Hart politically. I don't know. I mean, we have to see what the map looks like, because Hart's home county of Clinton is right on the edge of the 2nd District. And in some previous decades, Clinton County has been part of the Northeast Iowa District. So it's possible that Rita's Hart's hometown could end up in the 1st Congressional District and not the 2nd. So I think that's a bit premature. We just don't know. But certainly, I mean, the Republicans feel emboldened. They feel that they feel that Marionette Miller Meeks came out of this in a strong position. And the truth is, we don't know, we'll never know whether Miller Meeks got more votes or Hart got more votes. But I mean, their position is full steam ahead. And Marionette Miller Meeks is out there vaccinating people in all the counties in her district. I mean, good for her. She's promoting the COVID-19 vaccines, which I think is very important. And she's, other than issuing a statement on the day that this was resolved last week, she really isn't talking much about this election contest anymore.
Let's go from the U.S. Capitol to the state capitol in the state house last week. There was word late last week that someone associated with that chamber had tested positive for the coronavirus in the last few days, the second one in a week. What's the situation over there?
Well, we don't know much. We know that the person was last at the state capitol building last Monday. Supposedly, the person was wearing a mask the whole time, and the person received a positive test on Tuesday. We've been told that on the House side, they are doing contact tracing. So that would mean anyone who was in close contact with this person, whoever it was. And we don't know whether it was a member of the legislature or legislative staff or a lobbyist. We just have no idea. But there is contact tracing, whereas in contrast on the Senate side, when there was a previous case announced, it's not even clear that the Senate is even doing any contact tracing. The Democrats in the Iowa Senate have complained that no one's been told whether they or their clerks might have been exposed. No one knows in what part of the chamber the positive case was located. And so that's been frustrating for people who are working in the Capitol every day.
Are the senators and the representatives in general wearing masks or not when they're inside?
The Democrats are all wearing masks, and many of the clerks, many of the Democratic staff are working at home still. The Republicans, it's a mixed bag. There are Republicans wearing masks down there. Many of them are not. I mean, some of them never wear a mask, and some of them will wear a mask in some settings, but then when they get into a committee room, they'll take off the mask. But we see in a lot of the committees, you can watch the committees operating on Zoom, and you can often see Republican legislators sitting right next to each other, neither of them wearing a mask.
Okay. The governor made some news last week. She generally makes news during the week. This one was about signing into law that controversial bill that does away with the need for residents to get a permit to buy and carry guns. And this is a very big deal for the gun lobby, a very big victory.
Yes. Well, it was a classic example of when there's a really controversial bill, you can expect the governor to sign it late going into a holiday weekend. And not just this governor, but this is just a classic thing. Political reporters know that the afternoon before a holiday weekend, you can expect some big news. So I was waiting on Friday afternoon to see this press release. And so it wasn't a surprise that it came out. There were a number of bills that the governor signed, including this one that no longer will Iowans after July 1st will not need a permit to possess or carry a concealed weapon. And there was a second gun related bill also that hasn't gotten as much publicity, but it means that it's basically a liability shield. So immunity for firearms manufacturers and dealers. So people who are victims or affected by gun violence would not be able to sue in Iowa courts, either gun dealers or gun manufacturers. So those were both big victories for the gun lobby. But in particular, the activists on the pro-gun side have been working on this permitless carry bill for a number of years. And so they were celebrating on that Good Friday afternoon.
With the governor up for re-election next year, was there ever any doubt in your mind she was going to sign this?
No, I never talked to anybody in either party who had any doubt she was going to sign the bill. I mean, she kept saying that her staff were looking carefully at it. But the reality is, when a controversial bill is being debated in the legislature, if the governor doesn't want it on her desk, her staff makes sure that the legislators know that she doesn't want that bill to come down, or she wants changes to that bill before it comes down. And none of that happened. So the only question was the timing. And there was quite a significant delay. The bill was passed on actually the same day as one of the mass shootings that just happened in Colorado. And so there was talk about, normally when a bill reaches the governor's desk during the legislative session, she only has 3 days to decide whether to sign or veto. But often there's a little bit of a lag between when the bill passes and when they actually send it to her office. And that was the case here, that it was about 2 weeks in between the final legislative approval and when they finally sent it to her office, and then she signed it right away.
All right, it's 10 and a half minutes past the hour of 7 in the Midwest on this Monday night. This is KHOI's Capital Week. I'm Dennis Hart, and you're listening to Laura Bellin, and we're glad you're with us on this Monday night. So, Laura, let's talk state legislature. The legislature's second funnel came around last week. First, let's explain what the funnel is.
Yeah, so the funnels are a way of organizing the legislature's work. So the first funnel we talked about 4 weeks ago, that's at the end of the eighth week of the legislative session. And it says that any bill that's most bills that are not tax related and not spending related need to be through at least one committee in either the Iowa House or the Senate to still be considered. And the second funnel happens at the end of the 12th week. And to stay alive, most bills need to be approved by one chamber and through at least one committee in the other chamber. This, again, does not apply to tax bills or spending bills, but most other kinds of legislation need to get through this funnel. So it's a way of narrowing down what the legislators are going to be working on during these final, let's say, maybe 4 to 6 weeks before they adjourn for the year.
So a number of seriously important bills survived the funnel. We're going to talk about some ones that did not, but let's talk about ones that are still alive and still capable of being passed. So Laura, kick us off.
Well, again, anything that's tax related is still alive. So the phasing out of the inheritance tax, there are some major property tax changes, changing the property tax levy for mental health, changing so that the state is no longer going to support local budgets for the commercial property tax money they lose. Those are still alive. There are some affordable housing bills that are still alive. The governor's broadband initiative is still there. It's not clear how much they're going to spend. And the charter schools bill, which is the one that the House, we discussed this last week, where the House passed this one after midnight. This is the one that would allow people, individuals, to form a charter school without approval from the local school board. The diversity training bill that would ban certain types of training on so-called divisive concepts, that one is still alive. An open enrollment bill that would make it easier for students, for families to enroll their children in another public school district, not the one they live in. And there's a big long list of bills that are still pending. There's one that would protect agriculture facilities from another sort of beefed up trespass bill. This is similar to things that they've passed in previous years to protect. This is really trying to target whistleblowers in the livestock industry. That's the main purpose of it. But the bottle bill is still kicking around. I don't really expect anything to happen with the bottle bill, but there is still a proposal that made it through the second funnel that could still be considered.
Let's talk a little bit in depth about some of these bills. One of them that is still alive, the abortion constitutional amendment.
Oh, yes. Yes, this is the one where the Republicans say that this would make the Iowa Constitution neutral on abortion, but the only people who are supporting the amendment are people who want to ban abortion. So this amendment would overturn a 2018 Iowa Supreme Court ruling, which held that the state constitution protects the woman's right to seek an abortion. So this amendment would say the Iowa Constitution does not protect a right to an abortion or funding for abortion. And so if it passed, then in the future, if the legislature put any restrictions on abortions right to and up to and including a total ban, the Iowa Supreme Court would not be able to strike those down saying, well, that goes against the state constitution. So that one is through the Iowa House. I remain surprised that the Senate hasn't taken it up. Last year, the Senate passed this amendment and it stalled in the House. And so once it got through the House fairly early in this year's session, I thought it would go through the Senate quickly. So I'm not sure what is the holdup in the Senate, but it is alive. It's through committee and it could be considered on the floor any day.
If this thing passes and eventually hits the ballot and eventually is passed by voters, is there any opportunity at some point for an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court?
I think it would be very difficult. I mean, the U.S. Supreme Court generally doesn't review state constitutional amendments. There are exceptions. So the U.S. Supreme Court did strike down state constitutional amendments that banned same-sex marriage some years ago. But I don't think it's very likely if the Iowa Constitution were amended to say that there's no right to an abortion, I don't see the U.S. Supreme Court overturning that. I think what's less likely is that Iowa voters would support that amendment, because if it's passed this year, and then if it's passed again after the 2022 elections, the next legislature would have to pass it again before it would go on the ballot. And the recent Des Moines Register poll by Ann Seltzer's company found that less than a third of respondents said they support this idea of amending the Constitution to say there's no right to an abortion. So I thought that was a little bit surprising. And 55% said they didn't support that idea. So I think that it would be an uphill battle for the conservative aligned groups to get voters to approve that if it ends up on an Iowa ballot.
Another one of the bills that is still alive that survived the funnel is the addition of qualified immunity for law enforcement officers. And this is an interesting one because after the Black Lives Matter protests last summer, as you and I have talked, the state legislature seems to have responded by acting to protect officers instead of protesters.
Yes. And there were a number of proposals that the governor had a lot of ideas tied together as part of what she called the Back the Blue bill. And one of them was banning racial profiling. And then she had stepped up penalties for crimes that are certain types of rioting crimes and other protections for officers. Well, the legislature didn't move on the banning racial profiling, but they did advance some of these other proposals. And one of them that they advanced as a separate bill was codifying this idea of qualified immunity. Qualified immunity was a concept that came out of the judiciary. It was never in law, but this would say that police officers acting as part of their official duties wouldn't be liable to be sued if they violated people's constitutional rights. There are a few nuances to it, but that's in general what they're saying. Now, there were aspects to some of these Back the Blue bills that didn't pass, like the one, there was a bill that would say local governments can't, quote, defund the police, unquote. So local governments can't reduce their police budget from one year to the next. And that one did not get through the funnel. But one of the key Iowa House Republicans has said that he's might try to resurrect some of these police protections in amendments or in other bills. So we're going to have to see. But definitely, I think that qualified immunity bill is likely to pass, and probably also enhanced penalties for crimes like related to rioting or crimes that they would charge protesters with, specifically protesters who are concerned about police conduct, not all kinds of protests broadly.
Let's talk a little bit more about that bill to ban the teaching of divisive concepts at Iowa public schools and universities. This is one designed to essentially instruct instructors in what they cannot instruct.
Yes. And I mean, you talking to different people about it, it's hard to say how significant this bill would be, because it says that you can't teach divisive concepts like advocating that one race is superior to another or one gender is superior to another. And of course, that's not what diversity training or inclusion training does, right? So you talk to some people and they say, well, this isn't going to have any effect because none of the universities are doing training that advocates that one race is superior or that. So it's not really clear how that would play into it. Now, one of the bills is much broader. One of them was only focused on K through 12 schools and universities. And then the House version of that divisive concepts bill is a bit broader and might affect even some business entities if they have contracts with the state. So it's not really clear how that's going to go. I would expect that probably more amendments before that reaches the governor. And I haven't heard the governor say anything about whether she would be inclined to sign that. I mean, there are questions about whether that's even constitutional or whether that would be a restriction on speech.
Let's talk about one more thing that is still alive, and you alluded to it a couple of minutes ago, this bill to create a new method of forming charter schools. Charter schools, a very, very hot button issue across Iowa and across the United States. How would it make it easier to form charter schools?
Well, under current Iowa law, only a public school district can create a charter school, and only two of them have done so. So this law would say that any group of people living in a community can form their own charter school and they don't need to petition the local school district. They can go straight to the Iowa Department of Education for approval for their charter school. So there are a lot of questions about it. This was basically a substitute for the governor's original idea, which was vouchers or education savings accounts, where they would give money to families who want to pull their kids out of private public school and send them to private school. That one ran into a lot of opposition from Republican legislators. So this charter school idea is similar, and in that it would create more avenues for non-public schools. But I mean, no one knows how much it's going to cost, and it could be very expensive. I mean, sometimes in other states, these programs start small, but then they get expanded very quickly. And the history of charter schools, there was a report done, one of my guest authors, Bruce Lear, linked to a report that was done in 2020 on charter schools around the country, and a huge percentage of them fold within the first 10 years. I mean, very few of them are even still around after 10 years. So it's not really clear how much money this would cost the state and what, if any, educational benefit there would be.
We have been talking about bills that have survived the funnel, which means they're still alive and still capable of being acted on between now and the end of the legislative session. But a number of significant bills, as is always the case, did not survive. So Laura, why don't you give us a brief list of things that could come back, but for now they're dead.
Right. Well, one of them that is dead for now is the bill, the idea of protecting residents of mobile home parks, people who live in manufactured housing. And this has bipartisan support, but it just never came to a floor vote in either chamber. And so the key Republican sponsor of this bill has said he's going to try to bring those ideas back as an amendment to another housing bill. Another one, we had discussed this some weeks ago, the Iowa House unanimously approved a bill that would ban the use of what's called the gay or trans panic defense. So if somebody commits a violent crime they can't say, I did it because I found out that the person was gay or lesbian or transgender, and it sent me into a rage, and that's why I committed the crime. So that was particularly disheartening for the advocates who've been working on that bill, because this is now the second year that it's passed the Iowa House unanimously and then died in an Iowa Senate committee. So I don't know about that one coming back. The unemployment benefits, those bills that would cut unemployment benefits in a number of ways, those did not make it through either chamber. But I think I'm keeping my eye on that, because I think that at the last minute, sometimes they attach amendments to spending bills that are unrelated to spending. And that's one that I think we may see, at least the part of it that delays people from collecting unemployment benefits for the first week that they're unemployed. I think that portion of it could come back in a later bill. Most of the bills that are dead, I would say, are probably pretty dead. Like the one, this was an idea that the governor has voiced support for that would allow over-the-counter sales of birth control pills, but that just doesn't seem to have any traction in either Republican-controlled chamber. So I don't think that one's probably coming back.
Another one that she really wanted and is dead now, a constitutional amendment that would have automatically restored felon voting rights. Why did that die?
You know, I really don't know, because as we discussed in a previous program, the Iowa House has now approved that multiple times, and they approved a companion bill that said that only people who have fully paid their restitution would be eligible to have their voting rights restored. And that was supposed to be a gesture towards Senate Republicans. But the Senate Republican Judiciary Committee still has not moved on that voting rights amendment. And so there's not a lot of transparency on why that died. Usually it means that there wasn't enough support in the Senate Republican caucus. And when I say not enough support, there are 32 Senate Republicans and 18 Senate Democrats. So in theory, right, you only need 8 Republicans to join the 18 Democrats, and then you'd have 26 votes to pass a bill. But that's never how it works. The Republican leadership, they never bring a bill to the floor that only has support from a small number of people in their caucus. They basically don't bring bills to the floor unless they're largely supported by their caucus. So it seems that there are some silent Senate Republicans who just don't like this idea of amending the Constitution to allow people with felony convictions to get their voting rights back. But since they're not public about their reasons for opposing it, it's hard to know where they're coming from.
A couple of other bills that died, one that would have eliminated tenure, at the state's public universities, including Iowa State University. And another one, or perhaps more than one bill, died, involving penalizing Facebook and Twitter for restricting what people can say online. My question is, they're dead for now. Were these bills merely an effort to send signals to publicly spank some people like the universities and Facebook?
I think so. I think even the House Speaker, Pat Grassley himself, even implied that the ban tenure bill was more of a message that they wanted to send, that they're not happy with how things are going at the state universities. And unfortunately, they sent that message at a time when a lot of people are planning or are on the job market or looking, applying fellowships. And so I expect to hear in the coming months of quite a few faculty or people moving to universities in other states where they don't have to worry about this coming back. So I thought that was unfortunate that the governor didn't come out and say that this is a bill she would never sign, because she was asked about it directly. And she said, well, you know, I don't like to comment on bills when they're pending. I look at them when they get to my desk. And that in itself also, I thought, sent a strong signal. As for the Facebook and the social media censorship bills, I mean, it just really wasn't well thought out. Senator Jake Chapman, who was the big champion of that legislation, he's not an attorney. And there were a lot of concerns, again, that wouldn't survive a court challenge. And so I don't know, you know, there was a lot of chest thumping on that, but I don't know how serious a legislative effort that was. So, and that doesn't strike me as the kind of bill that they can bring back at the last minute on an amendment. I mean, that's too big an issue. So I don't really think that one's coming back. But sometimes, I mean, there can be some significant legislation. Last year, we saw a 24-hour ban, or waiting period, rather, for abortion that just emerged less than 24 hours before the end of the legislative session. And it was just added to an unrelated bill as an amendment. So, you know, sometimes there can be curveballs here later in the session, but I think that the Facebook censorship bill is probably well and truly dead.
We have a couple of minutes left. We're going to talk very quickly. One bill that died would have prohibited three cities basically from using traffic cameras.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the one. The Democrats said this is the defund the police bill, right? Because the city of Des Moines alone, their police department would lose like $2 or $3 million in revenue a year on that. So, and that was a bill that got through the Senate. It didn't get through the House. I'm a little bit surprised that it didn't, because the cities that it would affect are basically elect Democrats to the legislature. So I'm not quite sure why that didn't get through. But that's one where there's a Republican senator, Brad Zahn, who's had it in for traffic cameras for a long time. And so that's always been a priority for him. But for whatever reason, in the House Republican caucus, there just isn't as much support for that idea.
30 seconds. You wrote on your blog site, Bleeding Heartland, this weekend that two Iowa students had joined a lawsuit over discrimination at Christian colleges.
Yes, Dort University is in Sioux Center, up in Sioux County. The lawsuit is actually against the U.S. Department of Education, and they're saying that these Christian colleges, there are 25 Christian colleges across the country that get quite a bit of public funding and public support, and the plaintiffs are asking the U.S. Department of Education to crack down on the discrimination and the unsafe environment for LGBTQ students. So that's going to be an interesting case to watch. It was filed in Oregon, but the plaintiffs are from all over the country, including two undergraduates right now at Dort University.
We're just about out of time. What do you expect to happen this week in the legislature?
Well, I think we'll see some more movement probably on the budget targets, the state budget targets. I think that things may be taking shape on these property tax cuts or property tax changes in mental health. We'll possibly know more about broadband funding. And a lot of the other things won't be resolved for two or three more weeks, though.
And I just waved Laura goodbye because we have to say goodbye. Laura and I will be right back here next Monday night. You saw me wave, Laura, at 7 o'clock with a look at what makes news in the Iowa State Legislature this week and what it means for all of us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time, and good night.